This is the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. We appreciate you being with us. This hour, we're looking at the COVID-19 pandemic through the lens of another sweeping and devastating disease, polio. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. Polio killed and paralyzed millions of children through the mid-20th century until a vaccine became widely available in 1954. We're talking about why it took decades, and we're considering what's changed in public health strategy since. Join in anytime. Call 800-642-1234. Do you remember what it was like when a vaccine for polio was finally available? What lessons do you think we've forgotten about the time when polio ravaged the country or when that vaccine finally came out? Give us your perspective and ask your question about polio and COVID-19 at 800-642-1234. Randy Jewell is Dean Emeritus in the School of Pharmacy at the University of Pittsburgh. He helped produce the documentary film The Shot Felt Round the World. It's about the development of the polio vaccine. Randy, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
Take us back to the 40s and 50s. Polio epidemic sprang up around the world starting in the late 1890s, but they really peaked in the 40s and 50s. What was life like then?
Well, there are a lot of similarities between our current day situation with the coronavirus and the polio virus. The good news is nobody particularly knows what polio is anymore because it's been eradicated from the United States and most of the world as a direct result of the vaccine that were produced during the 50s, the first being the Salk polio vaccine produced at the University of Pittsburgh. I think it's perhaps useful to give your listeners an idea of what kinds of things people were facing. There are a couple of sentences from a book by Paul Offit, who is one of our vaccine experts in the country, who wrote a book about the Cutter incident. But his introduction tells you what it was like to have polio in your community. Quoting from his book, he says, "The tragedies caused by polio were fierce and unrelenting. It was an atmosphere of grief, terror, and helpless rage," remembered a nurse who worked on the medical wards at a Pittsburgh hospital. "It was horrible. I remember a high school boy weeping because he was completely paralyzed and couldn't move a hand to kill himself. I remember paralyzed women and iron lungs giving birth to babies." A daughter whose mother was a victim of polio in Phoenix remembered that during her first night in the hospital, when the virus raged through her body, deadening muscle after muscle, but leaving her on fire with pain, doctors performed an emergency tracheotomy to keep her from suffocating. Her throat muscles useless. She was unable to breathe, cough, or swallow on her own. So that was the kind of medical situation that was facing those who contracted the disease and had the worst cases thereof. And today, there was much mystery as to how all this happened. We know a little bit more about polio now, and we've learned an awfully lot about the coronavirus over the past few months. But the development of the vaccine, like I say, kind of makes it an unknown situation to us these days, and that's a good story.
Yeah. I mean, the description that you read, swap out the symptoms and the mystery and the concern and the devastation could have been written today by someone working in healthcare with what we're seeing with COVID-19. We know how COVID-19 spreads now. It was a little bit unclear in the beginning, and now we think we have figured this out, what are high-risk activities or ways that it spreads and less likely ways that it spreads. In the 1950s, did people understand how polio was contagious?
Well, eventually, but there was a lot of myths about how polio was spread. Some thought it was the neighbor's cat. Some thought that imported bananas caused polio. But what we learned that polio was caused by fecal contamination that somehow got into either the water system, the food system, or otherwise entered the GI tract of especially young children and infants. And the surprising part of this is that the development of polio in many places seemed to follow along the installation of sanitary sewer systems. And that would be contrary to what you would expect. You think if we cleaned up the environment, there should be less fecal contamination. But what is theorized is that when youngsters who were young enough to still have some protection by their mother's antibodies, maternal antibodies, rolled around in the dirt and the muck and the dirt and the filth, that exposed them to polio and helped them develop their own immunity. So adults typically weren't the target of polio cases, although some were. Most of the people who were infected with the polio virus and suffered the nerve damage and paralysis were young children, school age and below. So that's a difference from the coronavirus, which seems to have its worst effects in the elderly, although there are young people and that can see the disease too. Most of the deaths are from in the elderly, whereas most of the problems with polio are in the younger kids.
Randy Jewell helped produce the 2010 documentary about the polio vaccine called The Shot Felt Round the World. And we're drawing lines between that epidemic and the disease spreading today, taking your calls at 800-642-1234. And Kathleen from Lake Geneva wants to join the conversation. Good morning, Kathleen.
Yes, good morning. Well, I just wanted to mention that I was unfortunate enough to actually get polio from the first round of the shots. And I can assure everyone that I am going to be getting that vaccine as soon as it comes, because there's just nothing to be afraid of, and it makes me a little crazy when I hear people, you know, saying, "Will you get it from the shot?"
Interesting.
And it was very rare, but it did happen.
Kathleen, thank you for sharing that with us, and also for sharing the fact that you understand that, you know, medicine is different and the COVID vaccine is different. And, you know, Randy, have you heard stories like Kathleen's before?
Yes. And in fact, the book that I quoted from a few minutes ago by Professor Offit was about the Cutter incident. Cutter was the name of a drug company that was licensed to produce the polio vaccine. I mean, things were set up really well by Dr. Salk and his team at the University of Pittsburgh. The approval or the announcement that the vaccine was safe and effective was April 12th of 1955. And the next day, production and distribution started of the vaccine. The federal government had engaged a number of pharmaceutical companies to produce the vaccine. One of them was Cutter. Dr. Salk and the team had put together a very careful recipe for making the vaccine. And the folks at Cutter followed the directions except for one crucial step.
And
used a different...
I'm going to go ahead and jump in right here because we do have to pause for just a minute, but I want to leave that bit of a cliffhanger and we'll come right back into this conversation about polio, about the Cutter incident, and about vaccines, how we can take what we learned from polio and maybe some of the things don't translate, and talk about COVID-19 now. Randy Jewell stays with us, and we have room for more of your questions and your stories at 800-642-1234. I'm Keeley Boltina. You're listening to the Ideas Network. This is The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina. We're 10 months into a global pandemic with an infectious virus that picks and chooses who walks around without symptoms and who gets seriously sick or dies. We're talking about lessons about COVID-19, and we're getting those from another disease that people feared for decades, polio. Our guest is Randy Jewell. He helped produce the documentary A Shot Heard Round the World about the development of the polio vaccine. We're taking your calls, your questions at 800-642-1234. And Randy, you were talking about one of the companies that developed the vaccine or that helped produce the vaccine for polio, Qatar Labs, and they followed Salk's procedure to develop it correctly, except for one thing. Pick it up from there.
Yes, in order to make the polio vaccine, you need to find the polio virus and grow up huge batches of it in vats. Then take that virus mixture in water and add formaldehyde to kill the virus, and then proceed to filter that out so that you only have what's needed. Qatar used a different filter than was prescribed. And what happened was that live virus went through their filter so that the polio vaccine that they produced had live vaccine in it. And over 200,000 kids in some western states received that vaccine. There were 40,000 cases of polio that ensued, with 200 kids being permanently paralyzed, and there were 10 deaths. So that was a huge event that really put a damper, as you might expect, on the uptake of the vaccine by the general public at the time.
Right.
And for good reason. Once they found out what the problem was, it was corrected. I'd like to contrast that with the vaccines that we have today for the coronavirus. Neither of the two vaccines that have been approved or authorized thus far require working with live viruses. We just have the bits and pieces of the viruses that are produced by the messenger RNA so that there isn't any risk of getting the infection from these vaccines.
Right. And the CDC confirms that these vaccines in development and use in the United States do not contain live virus. So that's something that is different than polio. But this being a little bit leery of the vaccine, certainly that's the case now. And after an incident like that in the 50s, did that deter people, or were people so desperate at that point that it didn't matter, that once they knew what the problem was, they felt comfortable with vaccinations?
No, there was a deterrence there, and it delayed the uptake of the virus. You know, we look back and say that the polio vaccine was a tremendous triumph, and it was, but it didn't come easy. There were fits and starts and problems along the way, just as we're experiencing today in our understanding of how the virus works and how the vaccine should work. And, you know, some people are early adopters and some people are never adopters, and then there's the rest of us in the middle. And I think every news outlet in the country has run three or four or five stories on vaccine hesitancy or people who aren't going to take the vaccine, and they always make better stories than the people who, like Kathleen, your caller, who are more than willing to take the vaccine. And I think over time, the uptake of the coronavirus vaccine will be quite good. There will be those that want to take it in the first place, those that we want to wait and see what happens. And then we'll have societal pressures. There'll be employers that will require it, school districts that require it. So I think in the end, we'll have a successful outcome.
Yeah. We're talking with Randy Jewell, in 2015, retired as the Vice Chancellor for Research, Conduct, and Compliance for the University of Pittsburgh. We're talking about polio and how that does or doesn't translate to what we're dealing with COVID-19. Taking your calls, your experiences, and questions at 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Dan in La Crosse is ready to talk with us. Hey, Dan.
Hi. I contracted polio in September of 1952 at the age of 10 months. Initially, our family doctor failed to diagnose it. When he finally did, he said, if I lived, I'd be a vegetable. I'd never be able to use a wheelchair. I'd be a burden to the family, and they should put me in an institution. I've had about 12 years of college, a master's degree, self-employed teacher, and I'm a songwriter and poet, and among the songs and poems I've written are some dealing with disabilities, including a song about the vaccine.
Dan, thank you for being willing to share your experience with polio and with the expectations that were set for you after you got polio. Randy, that really speaks to the fact that we try our best to guess what's ahead, but we don't know for sure in the long term what COVID-19 might look like for people, just like we didn't fully know what polio would look like. We just made our best guess.
Yeah, and you know, the medical community has a lot better tools than we had back in the 50s, and I'm really sorry that Dan got that very negative view from his physician. And I suspect it did serve to be some encouragement. He's going to show that guy wrong. There's a story of another person that I'm familiar with polio, some people had little symptoms. Some people had temporary paralysis, some people had permanent paralysis, and some people died. So there's a spectrum, just like there is in the coronavirus. But we got to know a lady by the name of Tenley Albright, who's a Harvard medical faculty member. And she told us a story of when she contracted polio as a youngster. She woke up one morning and didn't feel well, and the family doctor came over and asked her to, she was lying in her back in bed, and asked her to lean up and look at her belly button. And she failed the belly button test, which was an indication that the muscles in her neck and back were not functioning properly. And they whisked her away to a hospital without telling her what was going on. Nobody would talk to her. She just, as a physician now, she looked back on it and said, I just felt abandoned and terrible. Well, she recovered from her case of polio and went on to become a physician on her own. And by the way, in 1960, won the Olympic gold medal in figure skating for the U.S. So there are all kinds and levels of recovery that people undergo with polio, in the same way with the coronavirus.
Yeah. What should we think about when it comes to long-term effects of the vaccine? I mean, just recently on this program, we talked with a pharmacist and a medical doctor about the fact that we don't necessarily know after you get COVID-19 how long the immunity lasts, and we don't necessarily know how long this vaccine will last, if it's annual or if it has longer-lasting effects to ward off the worst of COVID-19 symptoms. How do we begin to think about that, especially when we look at the polio vaccine?
Yeah, the polio vaccine is really remarkable in that you go through the sequence as an infant these days, and it basically provides lifelong immunity for most people. Most adults don't need to have a booster shot unless you're going to an area where polio is endemic. So that one turned out very well. The flu vaccine, on the other hand, has a very low effectiveness rate compared to the 95% of the coronavirus vaccines that we've seen now, and we have to change it and get one every year. So we expect that the coronavirus will fall somewhere in between, and you can rest assured that studies are being done on people who have had the vaccine and what their antibody levels in the blood are. And those will be tracked over time to see how long the immunity lasts.
Do you think we have better tools now, significantly better tools now than we did when they developed polio vaccine?
Oh, tremendously better. Yeah. I mean, it took over 5 years for the Salk vaccine from start to finish, which was remarkably fast for the time. But now we're doing it in basically less than a year. The speed of science is remarkably faster, but still not fast enough for those people that have fallen victim. I mean, we're losing, you know, 1,000 or more people a day to the virus, so it can't be fast enough. But if you look at from a historical perspective, this has been very rapid.
Yeah. We're learning about COVID-19 from polio, figuring out what's different today and what lessons we can apply. You're listening to The Morning Show. Randy Jewell is our guest. He stays with us for the rest of the hour. And we have room for more of your stories, your questions. You can call 800-642-1234. What parallels do you see between vaccinating for polio and dealing with COVID-19? What questions do you have about what's happening? What do you want to know about how the government or the medical profession could do to alleviate fears and concerns related to vaccines that could save lives? 800-642-1234. I'm Keely Boltina. Up next is news. Thanks for spending your morning with us here on the Ideas Network. It was a virus that we didn't understand. It spread mysteriously. We didn't know what caused it. A new coronavirus? Yes. And also polio. It's an epidemic that people alive today can still remember. We're talking about why it took decades to find a vaccine for that, what we can learn now during a pandemic from this vicious disease that we've managed to tame. It's The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kedar Cherkent. Our guest helped produce the documentary A Shot Heard Round the World, which is about the development of the polio vaccine. Randy Jewell is an emeritus professor of pharmacy at the University of Pittsburgh. And we're taking your calls. You're part of this conversation here on the Ideas Network at 800-642-1234. And now we go to Barbara in Madison. Good morning, Barbara.
Hello.
Hi there.
Yes. I was in second grade, and during the summer, I missed my friend when they closed the movie theaters and the swimming pools down. He wasn't in school to start the fall semester. When he came back, he had crutches and had what they said was residual damage. And I think it was in February. It was right after the first of the year. He developed pneumonia and died. And I kind of relate that to the long haulers with COVID, because he had been apparently paralyzed quite a bit and in the hospital for quite a while, and they thought he was better, but he still had residual damage that in the end cost him his life. I remember our entire class went by school bus to the funeral home. It's a very vivid memory.
Oh, Barbara. And all this time later, you can remember that so clearly. Thank you for being willing to talk about it with us, especially as you see the parallels and think that there may be some people facing similar memories in the future. Randy, Barbara's saying, yeah, again, we don't know what could come from this because it's so new. I also think that that seems to be what we're hearing from some people who call our show and say, these vaccines are also really new. How can we trust this stuff? What do you say to them?
Well, I think that's a healthy skepticism to have about any new drug or any new vaccine. And I'm not as alarmed of the numbers of people who are hesitant about taking the vaccine until they see what the data is. Mm. But you can go on the FDA's website and look at the study results yourself if you'd like, and know that they have been reviewed first by an independent group called a Data Safety Monitoring Board, which keeps its eye on the trial. They're independent of the sponsor who pays for the study. They're independent of the government. They're scientists who have been given the responsibility to keep an eye out for any adverse events that happen. And if they find them, they act accordingly. Not any of the studies dealing with the two vaccines that are currently authorized for use, but for a third vaccine, they did have an occurrence of an adverse event that may or may not have been caused by the vaccine. You know, and you have 30 or 40,000 people, somebody's going to get sick. But the Data Safety Monitoring Board shut the study down until they could find out what was going on, and eventually then restarted the study. So there's that group, and then there's the FDA Advisory Committee, and you can go on the internet and watch their 8-hour or 9-hour meeting. This is another group that's independent of the FDA, independent of the sponsor who's making the vaccine, who reviews all the data and has asked the question, is this vaccine suitable for use in our population? And they overwhelmingly voted yes on that. So I think people can take heart in the way that the thing has, the process has played out, that there have been independent scientists and clinicians who deal with patients every day who reviewed the data and say, I'm going to take this vaccine.
Right. You know, there have been at least three people who've had severe allergic reactions to Pfizer's coronavirus vaccine. Is that something that might suggest a problem with the vaccine?
Well, that we don't know the answer to that yet. Well, there's certainly something going on. Two of the people who had the adverse events in Great Britain were people that had allergies to other things and had severe allergies. You could tell that because they were carrying an EpiPen, the epinephrine injection that is used to treat anaphylactic reactions. The person in the U.S. seemed to have no history. And as of yet, we haven't been given a detailed report to know exactly what the problem was. But they've changed the instructions for both vaccines to say that if you have a history of severe allergic reactions, you shouldn't be taking the vaccine.
And some people do react to vaccines, and that's not necessarily then a problem with the vaccine. I mean, some of it is anaphylaxis or that really serious issue with breathing, but some people do run a small temp or have a breakout in a rash for just a bit of time. That doesn't necessarily mean they're getting sick with whatever disease they're being vaccinated against. It's our body's response. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, the body's immune system is stimulated, and you know, we see that with all kinds of vaccines where there's not only some pain in, where the injection is, but some people have kind of a light case of the flu symptoms for a day or so, and that's normal. Now, the anaphylactic reactions, of course, are something that's completely different, and it's really a medical emergency.
Are you worried that incidents like that might scare people off, though, from the COVID vaccination? I mean, you saw it when there was a really serious issue with one piece of the vaccine with polio.
Yeah. What we've seen with coronavirus vaccines is nothing anywhere near the severity of giving 200,000 kids live virus. But again, that's why we do the studies. And for people who are hesitant about that, they would be welcome to wait until the count of people who have received the vaccine gets up into the millions, which we'll see here in the next few weeks. And for rare events, it sometimes miss those reactions when you're only dealing with 30 or 40,000 patients in a trial.
Randy Jewell is an emeritus professor of pharmacy at the University of Pittsburgh. He helped produce a documentary called A Shot Heard Round the World that's about the development of the polio vaccine. And right now we're talking about polio and about COVID-19, drawing parallels to what we can see as similar and also acknowledging a lot of differences from the 30s when the vaccine was really first developed into the 50s when it was used, and now the COVID-19 vaccine as this pandemic has developed throughout 2020, including vaccines for widespread use. We're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What lessons do you think we can take from polio to deal with this COVID-19 pandemic? Maybe you think we've forgotten something about what happened then that you want to bring up now. Perhaps you have a question about polio or the polio vaccine, how it was rolled out or what happened. Now's the time to call at 800-642-1234. And Randy, when we are thinking about polio and about COVID-19, let's talk about the people who developed these, specifically the polio vaccine. How many different people were working to make this a reality?
Well, there were two major groups that were working on the polio vaccine. And I think a little bit of background. These days, the federal government invests heavily in research for new drugs and so on. Every major university receives federal grants to do that. Back in the early 50s, when Salk started on his work, there was no federal funding, and the money to do the research came from the March of Dimes, a private organization. And they funded two players. One was Dr. Salk and his team at the University of Pittsburgh, and the other was Albert Sabin, S-A-B-I-N, at the University of Cincinnati. Sabin was part of the old guard, and Salk was part of the upstart that thought he had a better way of developing a vaccine. It turns out that he did, but those were the two major players. Salk's vaccine was the one that's to be injected. Sabin's vaccine was the one that is given orally. So it was very popular with kids, as you might imagine, to get something orally rather than being injected, and very helpful in distributing the vaccine across the world, especially in developing countries where the injections are much more of a problem. However, the oral vaccine is no longer available in the United States because it, in people with compromised immune systems, can cause a case of polio. So we only have the Salk vaccine in the United States these days.
When you compare those efforts to produce the vaccine for polio with the rapid push for a coronavirus vaccine, what stands out to you?
Well, a number of things. Like I say, the work that Salk did was over a five-year period of time. That they had to start by collecting stool samples from patients with polio, running them down to the lab, and to determine which variant or which strain of the polio virus the patient was suffering from. There were hundreds of different strains of the polio virus, but they only found three that were the ones that caused infection. So they had those three that went into the vaccine, and that work took a couple of years. Contrast that with the coronavirus. Once the genome was published of the virus, people were able to make their vaccine within a couple of months as opposed to a couple of years. So very much different time frame in order to get to the point where you start making a vaccine and testing it.
Yeah. Randy Jewell is Emeritus Professor of Pharmacy at the University of Pittsburgh, and he stays with us. We're exploring how we fought polio as we engage in this modern battle against the coronavirus that causes COVID-19. Still time for your calls at 800-642-1234, or send us an email with your question, your experience, to ideas@WPR.org. I'm Keely Boltina. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. The U.S. is beginning the largest vaccination effort in this country's history, and we're learning from another big push to protect people, this one from the 1950s, when polio gripped the nation. This massive push to manufacture and administer vaccines, it included real missteps, and yet we can apply some of the lessons we learned some six decades later. Our guest is Randy Jewell. He's the Dean Emeritus in the School of Pharmacy at Pitt, and he also helped produce the documentary film about the polio vaccine. We're talking about that and COVID-19 now. And we have Janet from Madison who wants to join our conversation. Hi, Janet.
Hi. My mother had polio twice in the 1930s and 40s. And in the 1950s, she took my two older brothers an hour away from our small town to participate in the Jonas Salk vaccine trials. So they did that. And because of all that, I am the one person in my family that has no memory of polio. The rest of them had to do the things that had to be done in the 50s to avoid polio. And I have no memory of it. It went that fast from a scourge to nothing within a few years. with all that history, I'm a little surprised that your guest is saying that they are, that people should be skeptical of you know, science-based developments to the extent that they should wait and see if, how things are going, wait for the million vaccines. And, you know, if it's science-based and the science is good, I don't know why so much skepticism and telling the public they should can just sit back and wait. Seems like with 300,000 deaths, almost 2 million worldwide, we're in trouble.
Yeah, I hear you, Janet. And I think that that's a fair question that we can certainly ask our guest, Randy. Thank you for sharing where the memory really stops of polio and how that's something that was spared for you and also asking that question. And so, Randy, can you expand upon what you said a little bit earlier about the fact that people might have some healthy skepticism as new treatments, new vaccines come out?
Sure, and I would say that I'm in the same boat with Janet. As soon as I'm eligible, I'm going to go get mine. But there are a lot of people in the country that, because of the politicization of the whole COVID situation, do have skepticism. And I wasn't saying that they should wait forever, because we will get up over a million and several million administrations of the vaccine in the next few weeks, probably before most people are eligible to take the vaccine. We're dealing with first the people who take care of patients on a close basis, then nursing homes, and then essential workers. By the time they all get done, we'll have several million doses being administered. And I think for those who want to wait and see, that's long enough to wait and see. I'm not of a mind to say that you ought to wait forever. That's my opinion. But I don't want to denigrate people who do have skepticism want to look at information. And like I say, there's information widely available to anyone who wants to look it up and make the decision for themselves.
Appreciate that. We're talking with Randy Jewell, who's an emeritus professor of pharmacy at the University of Pittsburgh, and we're comparing polio and the vaccines developed there with our COVID-19 pandemic happening now. And Steve from Black Earth is ready to talk with us now. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. I have a card from when I was in second grade. There was a statewide, if not national, rollout of the Sauk vaccine to all second graders. And it was, you know, so I thought that was the big test bed for the Sauk vaccine.
So you were part of that?
Yeah. I have a card that said I was a polio pioneer from that. And I have other friends that are 75 or 74 who probably got them, too, because the whole class got it.
Yeah. Steve, thank you so much for sharing that. And your card reminds me of the pictures and the videos we're seeing of people just elated right now to be healthcare workers or people who are older and more susceptible, being really proud that they are at the forefront of vaccination. Randy.
Yeah, I think there's, if you don't work in a hospital and take care of patients, either as a nurse or a physician or a respiratory therapist or a custodian or food service, you probably don't have a good concept of what really goes on. They're there every day doing their work, afraid they're going to get the virus. And they've been doing this on an overtime basis for the last 10 months. They're exhausted, and the fact that they can get the vaccine is such a huge relief for them. And I'm so happy for them and so grateful for the efforts of those people, as well as, you know, people in the grocery stores and everybody else that have risked contracting the vaccine to keep our economy going as best as we could.
Yeah. So thank you to them for being in line. Thank you, Steve, for being that polio pioneer. And let's talk a little bit, because we don't have much time left, about how the polio vaccine was distributed and who paid for it, because we do know that COVID-19 vaccines will not be something that people will have to pay for, but there are other costs that will have to go through insurance and be associated with it. So how did we handle polio?
Well, that was a political battle. The American Medical Association and the Secretary of Health and Education and Welfare, as it was called then, did not want to heed the call that people should receive the vaccine for free, because that would be the slippery slope to socialized medicine. And there was a delay in moving forward. They developed a black market for the polio vaccine because it wasn't going to be free. And then the Qatar incident occurred. After the Qatar incident, President Eisenhower's view prevailed, and there was a bill passed to provide the vaccine basically free for everyone.
And that was in addition to the March of Dimes, which had founded was founded to finance a cure for polio, and it also helped with financing vaccine distribution. So we saw some public-private partnership there.
Yes, the same way it is now.
Mm-hmm. What about the fact that Salk famously refused to patent his polio vaccine? He said it would be like patenting the sun. How should we think about that when we are looking at COVID-19?
Well, there wasn't, Edward R. Murrow asked Salk, who does it belong to? And he says, it's the people's vaccine. It belongs to everybody. That would be like trying to patent the sun. That was a very humanitarian view to take. But if we look at the capitalistic society we have, somebody has to pay for all the work that's been done by scientists, by clinicians, you know, doing clinical trials of 30 and 40,000. It's a very expensive venture. And we have the two vaccines now is a good example. Moderna took money from the government from Operation Warp Speed to pay for their development. Pfizer had their own reserves and didn't take money from the government. So we've had two approaches to it. The ultimate outcome, though, is that the vaccine is being made free to everyone. Now, you had mentioned that there are administration fees and so on that we'll have to see how that works out. But the intent is that everybody ought to get it for free.
Yeah. Randy, this has been fascinating. Thank you so much for your time.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Randy Jewell is an emeritus professor of pharmacy at the University of Pittsburgh. He helped produce the documentary A Shot Heard Round the World. It's about the development of the polio vaccine. We've been talking about polio and what we know and what we can translate from polio and vaccinating for it to COVID-19. Just ahead, we've got 1A with 11 million immigrants living in the U.S. without documentation, being caught in the middle of an economic recession, job security, and the health risks of COVID-19. That's just ahead here on the Ideas Network. I'm Keeley Boltina, and this is The Morning Show.